This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 190.
So most of the world lives on what they call vertical income, which is, you know, you get a job, you get a 2% raise every year, and that's increasing vertically. And then at some point in your life, you get horizontal streams.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. Brandon Turner. What's up, sir?
Hey, I don't know. What's up with you?
Man, summer is over. Today was the first day of school.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is the teacher being mean to you again?
You know,
all the other kids picking on you.
They pick on me a little bit.
Yeah, did you bring your school lunch and your little Power Rangers lunchbox, all that good stuff?
I was wearing my Power Rangers costume.
Oh, there's just like underwear. That too.
Yeah, don't worry about what I'm wearing down there. But nah, man, school's in session, so you know, I think going to be getting back to a more normal schedule around here, which is always exciting. It's also sad that the travels and excursions of summer are coming to an end. But yeah, man, things are good. Things are going really well. Yeah, work is good. BP's good. Life is going well. How about you?
Things are good. Finally got a property under contract again. I got a duplex under contract. It's been a couple of months, kind of a dry spell here.
Oh.
It's been kind of weird. So yeah, whatever. I'm getting I should close here in a month or so.
And congratulations.
Thanks.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's great. Are you you're going to move in? You're going to house hack it?
I'm not going to house hack that one.
No, why not?
Well, here's the beauty of this one. It's actually rented, both houses, two houses, one lot. Both are already rented, cash flow from day one. Private lending is going to fund the entire thing, no money down.
Tenants. You're
inheriting tenants. Yes, I am taking the risk. Man. I know, I'm taking the risk there.
Uh-oh.
But,
have you vetted them?
I met both of them. Okay. You know. They seem all right. I might budget a little bit for an eviction at some point, but we'll see.
Bad move.
Yeah, I mean, worst case scenario, I'm actually evicting some inherited tenants right now as we speak.
Yeah. You know, that's not a bad move. You have to be prepared.
Yeah, you got to be prepared. The property I bought a few months ago that I knew I was going to have to evict them, I just set aside like $3,000. I said $3,000 of my repair budget was eviction money. So there's a little quick tip for people.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I've got a quick tip too.
What's your quick tip?
Today's quick tip. Today's quick tip is check out the Bigger Pockets video library. We just launched it. You can go to biggerpockets.com/videos and find all your favorite Bigger Pockets videos up there in our video library.
And it might be the prettiest page in all of Bigger Pockets.
It is pretty.
Who Ed designed that, right?
I think it was Ed. Yeah.
I think so too. Yeah. He's a rock star there. It looks good.
He is. It looks great. But yeah, so we've got a video library. You know, so many people, you know, like, hey, where do I get your videos? So instead of sending them off to lots of other places, which you can still find our videos on, but yeah, just go to biggerpockets/videos and the library will be there. So
yeah, it's very cool.
Quick tip.
All right. Well, let's get on with the thing. Today's show is really, really awesome. It's by a guy who is actually we're interviewing a billion-dollar agent, which means he's sold more than $1 billion in property.
Shut your mouth.
Yeah, $1 billion in property. That's a very small club of agents out there who have done that. But he's also a real estate investor and kind of a cool perspective on some stuff, especially like how he works with other investors who buy apartment complexes. That whole kind of the partnership thing is really, really cool. I think you guys will like that kind of an angle we haven't covered before.
Yeah. He was the top agent in the entire world at RE/MAX for 1 year and also at Keller Williams. That's, and obviously he's a real estate investor. So yeah, lots of great stuff. We cover lots of topics from, low income rentals to.
Yeah. Section 8 stuff. That was fun.
Section 8. Yes. Multiple streams of income.
Yeah.
It's a great show.
Yeah, so his philosophy, we talk about it towards the end of the show, but his philosophy on like what he calls horizontal income, I think is something that every listener here should be listening and doing what he's talking about, I think.
Well, you know, from what he says, what the average person has, what, 1 to 2 streams?
Yeah, 1 or 2.
At most 3 of horizontal income by the time they're retired. And he's got 60-something. It's amazing. I love it. Guys, this is show 190 of the Bigger Pockets Podcast. You can check out the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show190. And otherwise, guys, really quickly before we get into it, definitely make sure to subscribe to the show if you have not done so already. Just hit the subscribe button on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever else you're consuming the show, or if you're just listening on our website, follow those links to Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, you name it, and subscribe. Also, if you have a chance, please leave us a rating and review while you're at it. Let's get to this thing. Today's guest, as we already said, is a billion. No, he's not a billionaire. That would be pretty cool. Well, you know, if you are a billionaire and want to be on the show and invest in real estate, get in touch. We would certainly be interested in chatting with you. But no, our guest today, Pat Hyben, has done a whole lot of transactions as a real estate agent and has changed and transformed his life and now focuses primarily on investing in real estate for income purposes. And he's done all sorts of deals. I think he's done about 100 deals is what he said.
And he's a New York Times bestselling author. So
he is also a New York Times bestselling author. He's a podcaster. Yeah, the guy's brilliant. Guy's doing lots of great things.
You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. Connectinvest.com/VP. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that I turned one of my first homes into an Airbnb? It's true. And it even helped me get the extra income I needed to launch my real estate career. So if you want to try your hand at making even more income with your property, Airbnb is the place to be. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So let's get to this. Pat, welcome to the show, man. It's good to have you here.
Josh, Brandon, thanks for having me, man. This is awesome.
Yeah, no, it's an honor. This should be fun. This should be fun today. Yeah, so we're talking about...
He's famous, isn't he, this guy?
He's a big deal, I hear. That's the word.
Rumor has it.
Tell us real quickly about yourself. Why would we say you got some accolades?
Yeah, well, I kind of wish that... I'm in the real estate sales business from the beginning, and I wish it was a business where you could get rich without being famous. And I'm working on that now, actually, is how to get richer without being more famouser.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. So I've been a real estate agent, licensed full-time in the state of Maryland for 27, going on 28 years, and reached some very high peaks at some very big companies. In 2004, I was the number one REMAX agent in the world. In 2006, I believe it was, I was number one at Keller Williams.
Wow. And hey, Brandon, can we get a more impressive guest? I don't know that this guy really cuts the mustard.
Yeah, you know, well, he did a good job as an agent, it sounds like. But you also invest as well, correct? You got some real estate investments in there?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, that's part of my thing is I think that real estate agents or commission people in general, but mainly real estate agents, don't invest. Like, they just don't. They talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk.
Oh, man. Hallelujah. Yeah, I've been... I've been screaming that from the hilltops, man, for 12 years since I've been doing this. I mean, it blows my mind. I was an agent for KW and Coldwell for like 6 minutes each. Was not very good either time. But like what shocked me was that the agents were not investing. It just like, I didn't get it. And I get it now. I mean, I think they just, most of them don't fully understand the business. They're not trained. They don't know how to evaluate deals from an investment capacity. And, you know, they think that they don't have the resources to do it, but you know, little do they know you can be creative and actually get some deals done. But it's fascinating to me.
Well, they tend to be right-brained animals, you know, so they're very gregarious and very salesman-y and great with people, but just terrible when it comes to numbers and operations and, you know, everything down to savings. You know, one of my favorite things to do is to pick up a magazine called the Baltimore Business Journal. And in the back, it has 3 or 4 pages of all the tax liens in the Baltimore area and highlight names of real estate agents I know. it sounds mean, but it's just like, look at that sucker. You know, it's like
is that your weekly social media post? Is like,
and of course, on his websites, he's saying, you know, I'm the best and I'm the, you know, I'm greatest. And look at me in this, you know, $2,000 suit. But here I am in the back of the newspaper with a tax lien on my house.
Well, and that's one of the reasons I think so many, especially newer real estate investors, they take advice from their real estate agent who may or may not, but may have never bought a single property in their life. They may have never done anything, but they take all this advice like, oh, my agent said that was a good deal. I'm going to go buy it. My agent said this was a good multifamily. I'm going to go buy it. And they rely on, you know, rather than doing their own numbers, they rely on somebody else to tell them what's good and what's not. And it's dangerous.
I love your last guest, David, how he, and I'll never forget this. He said, when you ask a real estate agent how the market is, don't tell them if you're a buyer or seller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was deep. I was like, oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yep. I love that too. Yeah. That was an awesome show. So people can go back and listen to that, by the way, by going to biggerpockets.com/show. I don't even remember what number that was. 186 maybe?
We'll put it in the show.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes.
Check out the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show190.
Yeah. I think it was 87, I think, but 187. Anyway. All right. So let's jump back into your story. So, I mean, you were an agent for years. You obviously knew what you were doing in that business, but let's talk about getting into your investing. Like, when did you first buy your property for yourself? Like, when did you jump from agent to buyer?
I was 23. And 23. So I bought it, 23, yeah. And so I bought a townhouse and I rented out the basement to 2 girls. And then I rented one of the bedrooms upstairs to a friend of mine and lived in the other bedroom. So kind of, and I shared a bathroom with my roommate. I didn't have my own bathroom until I got married.
Nice. So you house hacked.
Yeah, we call that house hacking.
Yeah. I was so proud of that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great way to get started. I mean, whether it's a single family duplex, you know, triplex, fourplex, like those, good way to get started. Do you look back on that with fond memories now, or you're like, what the hell was I doing?
No, I think it was great. You know what I mean? Cause I just did it. I never really paid rent for very long.
Yeah.
And so I was always a landlord after that, you know, or owned my own home. And I actually kept that house up until like 5 years ago, finally sold it. But, you know, I mean, that was a great deal. You know, I just kept it and eventually it was paid off and, you know. Yeah. So anyways, that was cool. I'm proud of that. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the strategies that we really love to share with newer investors. You know, a lot of people come out and they're like, you know, I don't have a lot of money. I don't have resources. I'm not sure how to get started. And we always recommend looking at house hacking as a way to go, because it's an opportunity to save on your own personal payments while learning the ropes of becoming a landlord. Do you have any stories from those days or any tips, advice, or anything like that for newbies?
Well, what pops into my head is an amazing story. It's not about me, but it's about a guy I know. He's in Texas, and he's an illegal alien. He was brought here when he was a kid from his parents from Peru when they were on vacation or alleged vacation, and then they stayed here.
Right.
And so my point of this is now he's 26, so he's been here like whatever, 16 years or something. He has bought in Texas 5 houses from house hacking without being a citizen, in that he cannot get a mortgage, but his name – let me think about this. Yeah, he cannot get a mortgage, but his name could be on the deed. Mm-hmm. So what he does is he gets a friend of his or someone he knows to get the mortgage right? And then they split the house 50-50. They both own 50% of the house, and he has 5 investment properties now.
That's awesome. Wow. That's actually one of my – when I had no money at all, I mean, that was my main strategy. When I couldn't get a mortgage, I had no job and no money, and I was trying to, you know, do this flipping house and buying rentals and all that, and banks didn't like me. That was my main strategy. Find a partner, somebody who maybe had good credit, who the bank loved to work with, and say, hey, why don't we just split this 50-50? You get the mortgage in your name. We'll both be on title, and we'll just split everything down the middle. And that worked out fantastic for me for a number of years.
Well, yeah, I think that's a great lesson, by the way. If a lot of people are curious, like, how do I go from Monopoly little green houses to big red hotels? Mm-hmm. Most people that go from little green houses to big red hotels do it with partners.
Yeah.
You know, do it with somebody else that's richer. So there's an answer there some people might be searching for.
Yeah.
What I like about that story is, I mean, this is a guy who, like you said, I mean, illegal, you know, and that's not stopping him from making it happen. So if he can go and he can make it happen, then all you guys listening who are saying, well, I don't know, I don't have money, or I don't have this, I don't have that, like, those are excuses. I mean, there's an answer to all those things. And it may not be you're going to buy it today. It may be, you know, it'll take you a little bit of time, but, you know, anybody can do this. You just have to find the path, and there's a path for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the stories I like to tell people, like, I do this, I say this on the Bigger Pockets webinar every week, is, or almost every week I tell the story. Imagine for a minute that, I mean, people say, I can't afford to buy a house, I don't have enough money, right? So I'd like to use a story. Imagine that somebody, your next door neighbor, offered you their house for $1,000, just $1,000, but it was worth $1,000,000. But for $1,000, the problem is you didn't have $1,000 in your bank account. You had no money. Would you figure out a way to buy, come up with $1,000? And everyone says, well, of course. And I said, well, how do you do that? I don't know. I'd ask to borrow from somebody. Okay, well, what else? You know, maybe I'd partner with somebody, not from half the deal. Okay, what else did you do? And like, the exact same situation applies to any real estate. If you can do it with $1,000, I mean, the bottom line is you find a good enough deal and you're going to be able to find the funding for it if you want it bad enough.
Yeah. So, and there's a ton of people out there that want to invest in real estate but don't want the pain associated with looking at houses and picking a house and dealing with contractors. So if you can take that pain away, you know, chances are that's worth 50% to them. You know, we use their money and their credit. You deal with all the pain, and they're like, well, at least I own half a house, or, you know.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure. Well, I think we want to talk more about the partners thing as we move along. But before we do, what came next? So you bought this townhouse, you had the girls, the friend in the basement, you know, you're starting to experience what it's like to be a landlord. I'm guessing you got the bug, right?
Yeah. So here's the thing. So this was like 1991, something like that. And so the very next year, I wasn't married at the time, but I did end up marrying this girl, and I'm still married to her. But my girlfriend at the time, I had her get an FHA loan on a house around the corner from this first one. So she ended up buying that house, which was really in both our names, but I needed her because it was a first-time buyer loan, and I didn't have 20% to put down. So it was 2.3% down, so we put it in her name, so we bought that second one. Now, here's a mistake that I made. So that was, say, 92, let's just say. So I didn't buy a house again until 2000. Or maybe 1999. So, and a lot of people ask me, Pat, what's the one mistake, if you look back, or what's the one thing you didn't do that you kind of regret? And I think that would be it. It would be that I should have bought a house a year minimum in that 8-year time frame. You know, just methodically bought a house, because the real estate market didn't change at all in the 90s. It was basically flat. You know, it didn't go up, it didn't go down, it was just there. And now, looking back, of course, those houses would be worth 3 or 4 times as much, and they'd all be paid off. So, but anyway, so I took an 8-year sabbatical. I got into, what, like everyone else, got into the stock market. I actually took, I had...
In 99,
2000? Yeah, right around.
That was a good time.
All in the 90s, you know? Yeah, I made, I wrote about this in my book. I think it was 2001, I became a millionaire, right? And I used to have this software, I think it's still out, Microsoft Money, where every night you'd go there and it would calculate how much money you have. And it calculated $1,013,000.
Nice.
And I screamed. My wife's like, what's going on? What's going on? I said, we're millionaires. We made it. We're millionaires. And I showed her, and she's like, what do you want to do to celebrate? And I said, I don't care what we do, long as it doesn't cost more than $13. And that's a true story. And we ate Jerry's cheesesteaks and Miller Lite.
Nice.
And I actually took a picture that I still have today. It's a picture of us sitting there eating Jerry's cheesesteaks and Miller Lite saying, you know, we're millionaires. So,
I love
it. Then there's another side of that story. And of course, then, you know, 9/11 happened, the market crashed. So I lost 800 grand.
Wow.
I think my portfolio was at 115 or something. So I was like 1,150,000, went all the way down to 330 over a course of a year, right? 1 year, it was all tech stocks. It was all margined out. You know, I was borrowing money to buy stocks, and I just couldn't get out from under it. You know, I was like, it's going to turn around. The broker was like, it's going to turn around. Don't worry about it. Stick in. Don't bail. And it just went all the way down. And then it was at that point that I was like, you know what? I'm going into real estate. You know, I'm going to just start. I should have never stopped. I'm going to just go with what I knew, because I knew real estate. You know, I understood real estate. So then I started buying a bunch of rental properties, and I bought a bunch of properties in University of Maryland, College Park, and rented them to college kids. And then I bought a bunch of ghetto properties in Baltimore City and did Section 8 rentals.
Cool. Can I ask you, how'd that turn out? I mean, the Section 8 rentals and kind of it sounds like not the world's best neighborhood. I mean, what was that experience like, and do you still own them today?
Yeah, I still have 6 properties in Baltimore City. The ones that I kept or bought were in neighborhoods where if they found out that I was going to put a Section 8 in there, they would be upset.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I didn't want to buy on a block where every house in there was Section 8, because I felt that the risk is too high for a market to be created by investors that all want to sell at the same time.
Hey, real quick,
that's
could
fascinating.
You? It is. And can you explain what Section 8 is, though, for the people who might never have heard of that term before that are listening to the show? What does that mean, and why is it potentially beneficial, and what are the downsides?
Sure. It's basically government money that if you're poor, let's just say, and you have a bunch of kids, you could qualify for Section 8. Because your income, you know, because you can't afford to live where you want to live with all these kids. So you apply to the government, and then they usually will pay somewhere between 80% and 100% of your rent for you. And generally, the people that go through the process of applying and are organized enough that, you know, because they went through the interviews and the processes and all that stuff, and they all have some job, whether it's working at a Royal Farm store selling chicken, or it's, you know, working at a prison as a prison guard. I have one of those at Section 8. They're making some money, maybe 30 grand or something, but they're not making enough to afford something that houses 4 kids and a mom. So anyways, they tend to be better than, obviously, you know, 4 dope fiends or, you know, a professional criminal. So I don't want people to get the wrong idea. These are poor people with some sort of job that are organized enough to pass all the interviews and things. Now, at the same time, they are socialized in believing that they're entitled to this after a while.
Yeah.
So what happens is, if you have a problem with them, they're kind of like, well, I don't care. You know, I'm going to work the system. Like, I had a lady who actually lost her voucher. So she was getting, the rent was $1,400, and she's getting $1,200 of it. So we're getting direct deposits for $1,200 a month. She's giving us $200. It works out fine whether she pays us or not. And then all of a sudden she loses that $1,200 because she did something wrong. I don't know what she did, but she did something wrong, and they said, you're not a candidate anymore. So then we got to kick her out because she can't afford it. And she's like, no, you know, I'm gonna work the system. She actually told us to our face, I'm going to work the system, which meant she was going to let it go through the courts, which in Maryland takes 4 or 5 months before you can kick them out. So, and she did.
I was going to say, I had a Section 8 tenant. You had them too, right, Josh, back in the day?
I had a lot of them.
Yeah. I had one who wouldn't let the inspectors in to inspect her unit, which they're supposed to do. So she lost her voucher, which then, of course, she can't pay.
Same thing.
It took me 3 or 4, I think it took me that one 3 months to get her out, and she threatened to shoot me in the process anyway.
Well, so the downside is that, you know, there's lots of things going on here, right? They're getting assistance from the government. If that goes away for whatever reason, most likely because they screwed up, then you're going to lose your tenant. What are the positives? Why would somebody, because I will tell you, you know, when I first started investing and I brought on Section 8 tenants, I was really excited. I was like, oh, I get a guaranteed check from the government. I don't have to worry if they're making the money. And if they, like you said, if that $200 doesn't come in, as long as I paid right, I'm good. And in theory, that was great. In practice, managing Section 8 was not something I was down with, nor, you know, it takes a certain kind of person to deal with, you know, the lower income properties, because a lot of problems tend to come with them. So what are the positives that happen besides the guaranteed rent?
Well, in my experience, these are the positives. Number one, it's a seller's market, right? Because like I can get four people that want, you know, one of these properties when it comes open again that all want it, right? And I can pick which one I want, right? So, and if I tried to sell it to a regular family and get $1,400 a month, I couldn't get it. Right. They're not going to pay that. It would then become a buyer's market at that point. So it's a seller's market from the get-go because of supply and demand, because less landlords want to do it. And there's a huge demand of there's people that have these vouchers that can't find a house. Yep. Second thing is they pay above market rent. They're generally paying me 10 to 20% above market rent.
That's not in every market though, Pat, right? I mean, I know some markets, Section 8 will actually pay above market, but in others, you may end up getting flat or slightly below, right?
Yeah, I can't answer that, probably. I know in Baltimore, they pay above market. Because it is what it is. So, and then the other thing is, you know, the direct deposit that always hits your bank account the same time, you know, the first of the month, it's always there. The money's always there. So those are the positives. And if they have little, if their kids are young enough, they tend, and I don't mean to generalize, but they tend to, you know, want to stay there. It's not unheard of that they could stay there a long time. They're not really, you know, out there shopping for something better. For the most part. Now, I just had a situation where the lady was she'd only been there 6 months, and she witnessed a crime, and a gang that was involved in said crime came to her house and threatened her. So she called Section 8 and they called us and said, we need to get her out of there and move her to a new address. And I could have held her to the lease, but I just felt it was bad karma. Like I wasn't going to, you know, I felt bad for her. Here she's trying to do the right thing and be a witness where the rest of the city would be like, I didn't see anything. So I'm like, this is bad karma. Just let her out. And we just let her out. That house is coming on the market in like 2 weeks. So I'll rent it right away again. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. So Section 8, there's some positives. There's some negatives. It's not for everybody, but there's definitely an opportunity to make money. Really quickly before we move on, because I want to get to the college rentals after this really quick. You said that your properties, your Section 8s generally tend to be in neighborhoods where it's not a ton of Section 8 housing. And I think that's actually a really good idea. Yeah, wish I thought of that. How does one go about applying to make a property Section 8? How does one do that?
Well, you know, they just go on the internet and they download the rules, and there are certain things you got to do. You got to put like a lot of smoke detectors and CO2 detectors and just make it safe. Lead paint safe. Just make sure it's safe according to their rules. And then they come out and inspect it. The city will come out and inspect it. And if you pass your inspection, then it's eligible for Section 8. And there's a website, gosection8.com. And Section 8 people just go to gosection8.com, and at least in this area, and they just look for rentals. And generally, like I said, there's more people that want it than there are landlords.
Perfect. Cool. All right, college rentals. So, you know, also a niche within a niche, right?
Yeah.
Why college rentals? What's your experience been with those?
I've always been a cash flow guy. Right. I never really bought too many houses in the area that I lived directly, like my little neighborhood, because I knew that those were appreciation plays. You know, I knew that they were stable and they're good neighborhoods and good schools, but the ratios were just terrible with what you can get for rent. So I always wanted to go to where I had an advantage. Right. And Section 8 was one, I felt, and college rentals are another. And that what happens with the college rentals is you can charge by bedroom. So whereas a family might pay $2,400 for a house, if it has five bedrooms, I can get, you know, $3,500 from six college kids or five college kids by charging them $700 each. And if you look at what it costs to rent a dorm, the dormitories are probably $700, and you have to share a room with another kid. Where here in a house, you get your own room for the same price. And I'm getting market rents that are literally 50-75% above market. I have one deal I did. I actually bought a piece of land and I put two houses on it that are 6-bedroom, 2-bath, split foyer houses. So 2-level houses, a bath upstairs, a bath downstairs, 2 bedrooms, a kitchen and a living room upstairs, 4 bedrooms downstairs and a bathroom and a laundry room. Side by side, identical houses. I bought the land for, let me think, the whole thing I think cost me $175 a house, right? That's what it costs, $175,000 a house. Now this was like 2002. Today, rent is $9,000 for the two houses.
Wow.
So $4,500 each house. And what happened was both of these houses are right behind sorority and fraternity row. So we have one sorority that's been renting them out, the both houses, for like 6 years. They pass it down generation to generation, little brother to, you know, little sister to big sister, whatever. They keep passing it down. We never have to market it, nothing, no marketing costs. And we're getting $4,500 a month each house, $9,000. It's phenomenal. And some of that has to do with they made these laws with the fraternity row where they could only bring like a 12-pack of beer in a month or whatever, something silly with the amount of beer that they're allowed to bring in. And they're like, this is ridiculous. You know, I think it was like 1 beer per person per night or something. So there was an exodus of all these sorority sisters looking for houses, and they've locked in on these two. So anyways, I'm getting really high rents, and they're market rents. You know, I'm not gouging. Yeah. Actually, mine are lower than some.
I love that. I love the creativity behind that. Yeah. Like, it's
absolutely
just unique. So, I mean, how do you manage all that now? Do you have is it a typical property manager looks after? Do you go over there, hang out with the sorority sister? You know, separate the fights.
Hey, girls, I'm here.
No, I don't. You know, a lot of these houses I haven't seen in years. But I have a guy, Mike, who is a courier for the real estate team that I sold in 2010. And he's been with the team for like 12 years or something. So early on, you know, I hired him to do the property management. I think I pay him 6% and he does everything, you know, except for the accounting. And then I have an accountant that I've had for years who does all the bookkeeping and things like that. And then he charges me $500 a month, I believe, for 10 houses.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty good. And 6% is kind of a steal. So that's awesome.
And he's happy, I'm happy, you know, so it works out.
Hey, so how do you make a house college proof, college kid proof?
Well, here's the thing, you know, it's really, believe it or not, it's mental, because if I never see the house, I don't really care what they do to it. It's not like they're going to burn it down, right? I mean, they might.
They might, you know, but no, so, probably not.
And by the way, I have
that's
sprinklers.
That's Brandon's tenants who do that.
That's true.
When I built them, I put sprinklers in them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Number one. Number two, we put, you know, commercial grade black carpet in them. Yeah. Of course, we load them up with smoke detectors. But the real answer is this. We charge 2 months rent, security deposit. So I got $9,000 each house. So I got $18,000 of security deposit, right, for
awesome.
These two houses. And we have the kids and the parents sign the leases. And so, you know, it's pretty strong. That's a seller's market. We're able to do that, but that protects us. We've never had a problem. I mean, we've had problems, but we never lost money on a security deposit. And even if they just did headbutts into the wall with a headbutt contest and put massive holes all over the whole house, I wouldn't care, right? Because I don't see it anyways. It's just it's a business.
Yeah.
So we had on the podcast a long time ago, Darren Sager, and one of his big things was how do you tenant proof your house? I don't remember what show it was, and we'll link to that on the show notes as well. But, you know, he went and bought, you know, I believe he got, you know, flooring that was just, you know, super sturdy, you know, extra hardcore walls and things like that. You're not doing any of that beyond the commercial grade carpets and sprinklers.
Yeah, no. And if every tenant we have to repaint and recarpet, we don't care. And that rarely happens, you know, so.
Yeah. Got it.
Cool. Okay, well, so moving on back to your story a little bit. So I know maybe before we get to the rest of your story, I mean, do you have an estimate? If you had to estimate, how many total like real estate deals have you done where you're actively a part owner or a full owner in? Like, do you have any kind of ballpark estimate?
You know, I like the number 100 or so. It's just hard to say, you know. I've been involved with a bunch of flips. I like to sell, you know what I mean? I'm not one of these guys that holds forever. I do like to sell. Sometimes I'm right. Sometimes I'm wrong, you know. But I do like taking money off the table, you know, like the deals I did with that I'm doing with Andrew Cushman. Andrew and I and some other investors have bought 8 apartments since we started buying maybe 6 years ago or something. But we've sold 4 of them. So we've sold 50% of what we bought. So I'm not afraid to sell. I think a lot of people are afraid to sell. I'm not afraid to take money off the table, and I'm not afraid to pay taxes on a gain. I'll try to 1099 it, but if I can't, I'll just pay taxes. I don't care because I think it's prudent to be strong enough to be able to sell.
Makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah, a lot of people get nervous about that and say, you know, I don't want to sell unless I could 1031 it into another property. You're saying if I'm buying it right and I'm selling it, you know, I'm going to sell it with enough room where it's kind of irrelevant. I'm going to make a lot of money on these things.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And again, I no one knows if I'm right or wrong until I'm 80 years old looking back on the whole thing.
Yeah, sure.
And I have 1099. I mean, I have 1031.
Did I say 1099?
I don't know. I think
1031 exchange.
I have 1031 a bunch of stuff, so I'm not against it. But at the same time, you know, if you're selling something and it's at its peak, you know, and then you're buying something else in the same area at its peak, then it's kind of, you might as well keep what you have, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. And then I invest in other stuff too. You know, I start diversifying. I think I'm 38%. I call them cum bets. You know, if you play craps, a cum bet is when you bet on the roll, the last roll, right? So these are like something on the cum. So something is going to, whatever comes next. So they're more like private companies, more riskier things.
Interesting.
Where I used to be maybe in 2008, I can tell you I was 0% cum bets, 0% betting on what was coming next. Now I'm about 30-some percent betting on what's coming next. Private companies, equity deals, hedge funds, stuff like that. But I'm still 65, 70% real estate.
Okay.
I was just going to say, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people go all in. They're like, I'm going to go 100% real estate. I know it. I understand it. And you know, they say, I diversify through real estate, within real estate, which, you know, makes sense. You're saying, hey, I'm going to look at these other opportunities, your cum bets, and go forward with those. Why the ratios that you're choosing? Why 65% real estate? Would you ever want to go below 50% or
no?
You know, okay.
No, it's too scary. And I'm getting to the point now where I think that the world, the American world, let's just say, is too much ingenuity, like with Shark Tank and playing over and over and over again, and with all this money out there, there's like so much investing, and these people, I invested in 16 companies, and I'm starting to feel like, you know, some of these companies that I invested in, the hardest that they worked was when they were trying to raise the money.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and I don't see them anymore. I'm like, what did you guys do? I see them on Facebook and social media, and I make sure I friend them all. And here I am in France, you know, here I am doing this. I'm like, what the hell are you doing, dude? You should be out hustling. Yeah. You know, where's my money?
Yep.
So I actually, about 2 months ago, I just started saying no to everything, you know, because I think I'm over leveraged. I think I want to be more cash. My wife and I bought, now we own 2 like primary residences, one in Maryland, one in South Carolina. I sold an office building that I made some money on and bought the house in South Carolina. It was like 800 grand. We paid cash for that. And I think I'm just going to leave that. And then we have one in here in Maryland, which has like 50% equity in it. And I'm going to just leave that. So anyways, I'm starting to become more cash focused.
Gotcha.
And I think that's just part comes with, you know, any real estate investor's life is this kind of shift focuses as they go and eventually you get to the point where you're at right now. Not to say you're old or anything. I'm just saying you're your experience.
Well, you just,
you know?
You just said that. Not cool, dude.
We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. You're ready to open a business bank account for your new property. You know what that means? Coordinating a time between you, your co-founders, and your bank consultant, waiting at the branch, or waiting for hours on the support line. Who has time for that? With Relay, you can open a business bank account for your property 100% online from anywhere. Create up to 20 accounts to organize money by property or by categories like expenses, taxes, or investments. Effortlessly collaborate with role-specific access. That means giving your cleaner a debit card for cleaning supplies or your accountant read-only access to your transactions. Own multiple businesses? Relay lets you open unlimited accounts and access them all from one centralized login. Okay, I'm going off script here. That is cool. It's annoying that I have to log into 10 business accounts with my current bank. So go sign up for RelayFi because that's a feature that I like. No monthly fees or minimums, and it takes just 10 minutes to sign up. Head on over to RelayFi.com/BiggerPockets for stress-free banking. You can join me because I'm heading on over there right now. I'm heading on over to RelayFi.com/BiggerPockets. Relay is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Thread Bank, member FDIC. The Relay Visa debit card is issued by Thread Bank pursuant to a license from Visa USA Inc. and may be used everywhere Visa debit cards are accepted. Take a second and imagine this: immediate cash flow, above average rent, built-in equity, and a foolproof exit plan. No, it's not 2012 again. This is just what it's like to invest with Integra Development Group. They've simplified the real estate investing process so everyone can invest. With their new construction single-family rent-to-own homes, you'll get aggressively priced, brand-new properties that have tenants in place now in one of the fastest-growing states in America, Florida. Here's how IDG's rent-to-own strategy works. You get exclusive access to inventory with aggressive pricing thanks to IDG's builder-partner relationships. Then, invest and collect immediate cash flow with tenants already in place at or very close to closing. With the demand for new builds, your tenants pay above market rent, so you rake in more cash flow. And you'll get built-in equity and appreciation with an already agreed-to purchase price at year three, helping the tenants become homeowners while you build wealth. That's investing simplified. So secure your next investment property today with Integra Development Group at IntegraDG.com. That's IntegraDG.com to start investing today.
All right, so I'm gonna transition before I get myself into more trouble, and I want to talk about you mentioned earlier that you work on some apartment complexes with some partners, guys like Andrew Cushman, who we had on the show. Can we talk about that for a little bit? Coming from the standpoint of we've had a lot of guys like Andrew on the show who are the syndicator. I mean, they're the guys that put together everything, but we haven't talked a lot about the guys who are the ones partnering with them, that providing the funding. And I'm assuming that's kind of your main role, or are you also actively?
That's the role. He's the brain behind it. You know, okay. He does all the analysis and all that, and then we're just the money people, essentially. I mean, we throw in our 2 cents, but essentially we're the money people, or we're the people that know people with money.
Yeah. Okay. So, and that's why I think this will be a fascinating topic, because again, for people listening to this right now, I want to hear a little bit about like your experience with that, both from the standpoint of when I'm trying to raise money from guys like you, like what are you looking for? What makes you feel comfortable to invest with somebody? But also people listen to the show who have money and they don't want to necessarily spend the next 6 months putting together this gigantic deal. They'd rather just find somebody they trust. So from both those standpoints, can you talk about like what attracts you to a deal? What makes you say, you know what, I think I do want to go in on this deal and put my money into it?
Well, I think that the people need a track record. I think that's so important because I get deals all the time. You know, people, I mean, this is not an exaggeration. I probably get a deal a day of somebody because I have a podcast and people know I invest and they hear me and people I don't even know are like, hey, you know, my brother's putting this shopping center development deal together or my, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, make a long story short. And what I look at is, you know, do they have a track record? And a lot of times they don't. A lot of times they're just, for some reason, think that they're a syndicate person, you know, or that they can put together a development deal.
Yeah.
And they have no experience in it. It's ridiculous. So I think it's important that you look at who it is and how many have they done and what's the track record and, you know, what are their averages and do your due diligence, because I've certainly done deals over the years, all sorts of deals where I lost all my money. And it is possible, you know, that could happen. There's a dark side to capitalism. I think that a lot of people have that wrong. They think that, you know, they can write a check for $100,000 and give it to somebody. And no matter what, it's going to do good. Well, you know, there's a dark side, even though these little rentals, you know, there's a dark side, but the key is doing enough of them. I have close to 60 now. It fluctuates between 55 and 60, like streams that pay me horizontally. That's how I was essentially in 2010 or so able to get out of the real estate sales business and just kind of hang out. So anyways, I think it doesn't bother me, you know, if my tenant moves out because of, you know, she was threatened. It doesn't bother me if a kid, you know, lights a couch on fire because Maryland lost a Duke, which did happen. But luckily it was in the front yard.
Wow.
So anyways, am I making sense?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, you said track record. I have two questions that just came from your answer. What about, I understand that people need you're looking for somebody with a track record. So that's great. I think that's really important.
That would be key.
Yeah. So those people that don't have a track record, how should they build that track record? Obviously, it sounds like you're saying, don't start and saying, hey, I'm a syndicator. Start maybe buy a house or two houses, five houses, whatever it is. Prove that you can actually make money in real estate for other people on a smaller scale and then work your way up. Is that what you're implying?
I think so. Some of these people, I want to say, why don't you go out and just buy up a ghetto property? You know, why don't you just go out and buy a house for $30,000 and rent it out for $500 a month? You know what I mean? I mean, just get your head kicked in and show that you have the wherewithal, because a lot of these people, they're, you know, you don't, in reality, they might not last, you know? I mean, they might not, you know, 3 or 4 years, they get another job, they, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, you want someone who's, well, like Andrew, right? I mean, like, he quit his job as an electrical engineer, whatever, chemical engineer, and he's never looked back, and that was like 8 years ago, and this is all he does. I don't think he's ever going to say, I want to be a chemical engineer again, ever.
Yeah.
And there's so many people out there that are just, think that they're serious now, but they're not. They don't have a track record, you know?
Yeah.
Did I answer the question?
You did. I mean, talk about horizontal income, because you brought that up as well. And before we move on to back to track record, what exactly is that?
So most of the world lives on what they call vertical income, which is, you know, you get a job, you get a 2% raise every year, and that's increasing vertically. And then at some point in your life, you get horizontal streams. One is Social Security. That's a horizontal stream. You get that, right? Whether you work or not, your retirement may be a horizontal stream. But you might only get two, maybe three, okay? I've always believed that you should create horizontal streams early. So instead of trading time for money, which I understand you got to do to get down payments to buy things and stuff like that, but at some point your goal should be creating horizontal streams. So I started creating them. You know, like when I first got into College Park, the returns were so good, University of Maryland, I bought seven of them, you know, boom, 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 boom. And then you know, with these Section 8 rentals, I started buying a bunch of them. And then, you know, with Cushman, you know, I was like, okay, give me, I'll put 100 into that one. I'll put 100 into that one. And so my goal was actually to create as many lines as possible to diversify.
Yeah.
So that if one of the apartment buildings went bad or one of the rentals went empty, that the other ones were making me happy. And then I started doing the same thing with companies, which is a little trickier because I bought 16 private companies or portions of them, you know, percentages. And I would say out of those, probably only five pay me horizontally. So it's harder to make that work. Those are more kind of like equity plays. But the ones that do pay horizontally are great because then you're like, oh, wow, this is great. I'm going to get paid this forever, you know. And then if they sell the company, I'll make a ton too. But it's great. So that anyways, that's the goal.
That's cool. I'm a huge believer in that, you know, like having multiple, like they say, multiple streams of income or multiple, you know, lanes or whatever people call it. Like I love that idea. Yeah. I mean, like what you said there, I think was key. Like when you're younger or at least when you're as soon as you can, you just, people spend so much time trading their time for dollars, right? At a job or whatever, but you start trading your time for these assets that you're building, these horizontal income streams. I know, I love that. So,
and you learn awesome. A lot with each yeah. one that you do.
Yep.
It's a built-in education.
Yeah.
You know, so even if you're just looking at profit loss statements on an apartment building and looking at the pro forma on it, you know, read it seven times, you know, learn from it. Even if you don't put 50 grand into the deal, you know, learn from it. And if you do put 50 grand into the deal, pay attention when you get an email as to what it says as what's going on with the development.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the reasons I have a hard time with flipping houses. I mean, I like flipping houses. It's fun. But every time I flip a house, I'm like, man, that income's gone. It's gone for good.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like
yeah,
man, I could have spent all that time and, you know, refinanced it, turned it into a rental property and kept it for the next 50 years of my life. And I don't know. It's always a tough one. But going back, I have one more question before we move on to the fire round. But I'm curious, when you're working with somebody on an apartment complex, they come to you with a deal or whatever, you know, how much do you personally dive into the numbers? And how much do you just trust that the person knows what they're doing? You know, like how deep do you dive into that?
So someone's bringing me a deal.
Yeah, let's say, I mean, let's say
considering investing in it.
Yeah, like Andrew brings you a deal, a guy you
trust. Brandon's got a deal.
I bring you a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how much of this is just trusting me and how much is trusting the numbers?
Well, I do trust, but I do verify, you know, that old cliche, but it's, sure. I can look at, I have the ability to look at numbers, you know, get a cup of coffee, shut the door, don't take any interruptions. That's how I got to look at them. But I would say it's about 70-30, meaning 70% of it is trust because you just don't know, you know, you really don't know. There's things that I thought would be terrible investments and they turned out great. And there's things that I was like super confident of and they were complete disasters. And I've learned that I'm not that smart, you know what I mean? Like, so I have to trust other people. I mean, that's good and bad, you know?
Yeah.
It's good because you pull the trigger faster.
Yeah.
You know, if you trust them, you're going to pull the trigger. And usually action helps you build wealth or helps you, you know, people that act generally do well in this world. But on the downside is if you put too much in it, you could lose a lot. So I guess the key is, you know, find people with a track record that you trust, even if you have to do background checks on them and a credit report on them. That's not a big deal nowadays, that you trust them, but then do a little here and a little there and a little there. And you know, it's not unheard of. You know, another friend of ours, David Osborne, he has 360 some horizontal lines.
Oh.
So don't think that like 10 is a big deal, right? You know, think like, oh, he's got 360. I want to get 400, you know? So yeah, okay, I'll put 25 in that one or I'll put 100 in that one or I'll, you know what I mean? Just like, okay, here's another line and we'll see what happens.
So Pat, on this, you talk about the track record. You talk about obviously that 70% trust. You look over the numbers. Is there anything else that is going to attract you to a deal, or is it just the numbers and the guy or gal?
Well, lately it's been, you know, this is a timely question, okay? Because we're obviously, I don't want to say we're at the top of a market, but we're in the upper 30% of a market. We're somewhere between 70 and 100% at the top of a real estate market. Would you agree with that?
Probably.
Okay. So yeah. You have to be more concerned with, is it recession proof? You know? And so to answer your question, the other thing that I would look at today that I probably wouldn't have looked at 5 years ago or even 2.5 years ago or 2 years ago was, is this thing recession proof? Is it in a path of growth that's going to happen irregardless? For instance, Andrew and I are looking at an apartment complex now that, you know, I won't get specific because it's, I don't know what I'm allowed to or not allowed to say, but it's in what we consider the path of growth, okay? Because of some things that are going in that are being built by the government, let's say. And that's a big plus. And if that weren't happening, we probably wouldn't be buying it because that helps it be recession proof, you know, should the market turn downside. It used to not have to be a factor. It used to be if the numbers worked and the pro forma looked good and I trusted the person, you know, I went in on the deal. Now it's more than ever now, I'm still buying. I still will buy that, but I'm not as excited to buy, you know, just regular old stuff. Does this make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's got to be in a path of growth or got to be in an area where you're going to see appreciation. And I hate to say that to anyone because my whole life I've invested in cash flow. Sure. But I think now, since we're at the top of the market or coming to the top of the market, you should invest in cash flow and also invest in a place where you see something that's going to pull it up that's not just the markets.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Fair enough. I love it.
I've been a big believer of the idea that like cash flow helps you quit your job, but appreciation is what's going to make you rich. I mean, when I wanted to quit my job, I needed $3,000 a month. I said, okay, I went out and found $3,000 a month in cash flow. I mean, that it's doable, right? But
yes.
When it's like, hey, I want to have $20 million. That's a lot of rental properties to buy in cash flow to have $20 million. So,
right.
Well, cool. All right. Well, hey, let's shift gears here and head over to the world famous fire round.
It's time for the fire round.
These questions come directly out of the Bigger Pockets forums. And today, Pat, we're going to fire them right at you.
How could you get to those forums, Brandon?
Oh, you can get to them by going to biggerpockets.com/forums.
Excellent.
And you can ask questions of people like Pat here who can help you out. So number one, when looking for a residential property, what is the key you found that's brought you the most success? Is it location? Is it the type of property? What is it that you've, looking back, has been the most, I don't know, I'm kind of rephrasing this, but what's been the most impactful, like one factor of your successful deals?
I would say something that has a unique advantage, you know, like the college kids being able to rent them per bedroom or Section 8 in Baltimore paying 20% above rent, stuff like that.
I love it.
I think that's great. All right, cool. Next question. Let's say you've got $1 million to invest in multifamily properties. Where do you buy or what do you buy?
Yeah, we've been buying. We like Georgia. Atlanta is a great area. It's a hot area. There's a lot of people moving in. We have several apartment buildings in Macon, Georgia, and some surrounding areas of Macon, you know, suburbs of Atlanta, so to speak. For multifamily, that's really where we like. We've looked at some stuff. We had one in South Carolina we just sold. We had two in Texas. We just sold both of those. Texas is peaking. And we bid on one in Florida last month, but we didn't get it. And there were like 18 bids on it. And the person that got it put $250,000 hard down on it, which is pretty unheard of in the commercial market, where they basically said, if we don't go through with it after our due diligence, you get to keep the $250,000. It was like a cash deposit that day.
Wow.
And outbid everybody else. And that would be maybe a seller market-esque. So to answer your question, we like Georgia. Obviously, you know, a lot of my regular little things are in Maryland, but that's just because this is where I grew up.
Cool. Right on.
Number three, do you consider real estate a business or an investment?
Well, when I was selling and I was earning commissions, it was definitely a business. I would say the answer to the question is investment.
Okay.
Fair enough. All right, last question of the fire round. My loan was denied because I've switched jobs too recently. Any advice for me getting a loan approved?
That's a great question. I had a situation where I wanted to get a loan on my house here in Maryland. You know, I did something. I've had some interesting challenges with loans. When the bubble burst in 2008, I panicked and I sold a bunch of crap, pulled all kinds of money off the table, and every other loan that I had, I paid off. So I had all these houses and everything in cash, primary was in cash. Everything was in cash. And then when the market started getting hot again, where I wanted to start buying again, I couldn't get a loan because I was living off my horizontal income. And I'm a declared real estate professional on my tax returns, which if anybody listening isn't, they should be if you can. And it allows you to massively accelerate things like depreciation. And I get a lot of depreciation off of any income that comes in to offset it. Also, some of these apartment buildings, when we buy them the first year, we'll put hundreds of thousands of dollars in them in repairs. And that becomes expenses that we can write off. So to make a long story short, my tax returns were terrible. I couldn't get a loan. I went and I got commercial loans against some of my properties. So that would be the answer to number one, would go to a small local bank. If you're in South Carolina, go to, you know, wherever you're at. If you're in Charleston, South Carolina, go to Charleston Community Bank. And generally they tend to lend a lot easier than a big mortgage company. And number two, I got a loan recently. Because I have loans now, I have a commercial loan that covers about 10 properties. Fannie Mae, you know, only lets you have 10 houses, mortgages with 10 houses. But I did find a bank that allows more than 10. And I did find a bank that won't even look at your tax returns. So,
Nice.
And so just keep looking and trying.
Yeah, it's out there. They're out there. You just have to find it. I'm sure like the Bigger Pockets forum is, you know, I'm sure. If not, if I'll go in there and post this guy's, or I can text it, give you guys the phone number, this guy that just gave me a loan that does them after 10. Now, the interest rate I got was 6 3/8, I think, or something like that. So I paid a high interest rate, but I,
you got
you
it.
Know, it was my 11th investment that had a loan on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Shoot me over. We'll put it in the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show190. All right. So that wraps up the fire round. So now let's transition to the very end of our show, which we lovingly call our
famous four.
All right. The famous four. These are the same questions we ask every guest every week. And so I'm sure you know what's coming. Pat, number one, what is your favorite real estate related book other than your own? I know you have your own book.
Which she'll tell us all about.
Yeah, that's soon. Right. You know, I've read all of Robert Kiyosaki's books, but I think the one that he was in his flow on that made a lot of sense was Retire Young, Retire Rich. That seemed to put all the pieces together real well. So I would say that. Yeah.
Okay, I've not read that one. So I've read.
Nor
most
has
of those
anyone
other ones.
Mentioned it.
Yeah, I don't think so. So cool.
Good.
Nice.
Good call.
What about favorite business book?
So I just finished reading this book, and some may say it's kind of earth crunchy. Others may say it's a business book, but it's written by this guy called Mickey Singer, and basically it's called The Surrender Experiment. And it is a business book in that he developed a software, and he had created a company in Florida with several thousand employees, and he was the sole owner. So it's a business book. But at the same time, this is a guy who never wore shoes, right? He was a hippie. Oh. And it's all about surrendering. And I've always been kind of a control freak my whole life. And basically what he says is, you know, there's some things that really don't matter, and just let go of them and watch what the universe does with them. So rather than reach out and say, oh, you shouldn't do that, or if you do that, this will happen, or blah, 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 just delete the email, you know, or don't even respond, and just say, I'm going to watch what happens in the universe. Just surrender to the experience. Or if you have an employee that you don't have faith in, you know, just surrender and have faith. It's kind of like the tenets in the college units. You know, you just surrender to that. It's a surrendered. I'm not going to get caught up in they can have the wildest keg party ever. I don't really care, right? I just surrender. Yeah. Right? What? Why? It doesn't make a difference to me. So. Yeah. So it's called The Surrender Experience and Experiment, and I just finished reading it. It was a good book.
Nice. The Very author cool. was, you said, Mickey Singer. It wasn't Brandon Turner with no shoes?
No.
Sorry.
Oh, well, disappointing.
All right.
All right, Pat, what do you do for fun, man?
Okay, so, you know, I sold my company, my real estate team and my partner back in 2010, and then I kind of just decided to kind of chill, basically, just become like an investor. Or I wrote my book. Now I do my podcast. I just do what I feel like doing. So what do I do? You know, I don't know. You know, it's funny. My friends say, "Oh, I did you go to Target today and stand in front of the gum aisle and see what type of bubble gum to buy for 10 minutes?" You know, and I, you know, I
Good problem to have.
I like working out. I like being outside. I like hiking, and I like to travel. I just got back from Jamaica.
Nice.
My wife and I went, met another couple we've known for years for a week there. Next week, I'm going to Vietnam with GoBundance for 2 weeks, and that's going to be an incredible trip. I'm going to Australia and New Zealand with my wife and kids over Christmas. We're going to do New Year's Eve in Sydney. So, nice. You know, I just like to create bucket list moments and kind of get the most out of life, you know?
That's cool. And you are one of the founders of GoBundance, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we've had like, what, 5 GoBundance people? I actually finally just joined GoBundance, so now I'm part of the cult. I mean tribe. No, I love it. So it's fantastic. You're totally invited. All right. Well, very cool. Yeah, I'm looking. Yeah. I love the bucket list kind of that kind of lifestyle. So that's cool.
Well, I love the quote. I like to create bucket list moments.
Yeah.
I think that is beautiful. I really love that.
Yeah. Create moments that you're going to take a picture of. That's not just a selfie. You know, here's me, you know, standing on this. Like we went to Norway a couple of years ago. And we went to, you know, stood on that rock that sits in the middle of all those
rocks.
Fjords. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's like in the middle of nowhere. There's this rock and it drops down. Like it's called K-Rock, Kerbolton. Anyways, we got a picture on top of that. And, you know, what can you get a picture of? What can you, you know, here's me with this orphan in Vietnam. You know, I mean, stuff like that you're just going to remember forever through a photo. Actually, one of the things I did with GoBundance, I was in charge of the Vietnam trip, and I bought everybody going a Polaroid camera. And I said, our goal is to leave 1,000 Polaroid photos with children that have never seen a photo of themselves before.
I love
that's
that.
Cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Really cool.
Well, cool. All right. Well, my final question of the day and the last of the famous four. Pat, what do you believe sets apart successful real estate investors from all those who give up or they fail or they just never get started?
I think it's the middle part, the give up. You know, and being in the real estate sales business, I saw this a ton where someone would buy one rental property and it would drive them nuts. They'd be like, oh my God, the tenant's driving me crazy. I had to change this. And they called me over there and said this wasn't working. And the fuse box, the switch was off. You know what I mean? It was, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they just can't handle it. They let all that stuff bother them. Going back to what we talked about earlier, you can't let any of that bother you. You just have to say, like a mentor of mine used to have this saying, and his saying was, everything's going normal. And that was his phrase for everything. So whenever you're like, oh my God, you know, you say everything's going normal. That's how it's supposed to have. Oh my God, the tenant's moving out. You know, everything's going normal. Everything's going normal. And if you can do that, you can last so much longer in this game, you know, and that's probably the difference between success and failure, you know?
Yeah.
Right on.
I love it.
Cool.
Love it.
All right. Well, before we let you go, I know you've got a book, you've got some other stuff happening. Where can people find out more about you? You know, what do you want to share? Let people know, you know, that they should check out.
Yeah, I would say Google me. I'm all over the place. Depending on what you want. I have a podcast. I have a book. You know, I have a main website, pathybin.com, that I'm redoing now. That should be, you know, all my different websites put together. If you're interested in some of these apartment buildings that Andrew and I do, you could just go to vpacq.com. That's VPACQ. That's Vantage Point Acquisitions. Or you could Google that. It's the only company that's called Vantage Point Acquisitions. And, you know, that's it. Reach a six. Oh, the book, by the way, is 6 Steps to 7 Figures. It's a guide for real estate agents, mainly on how to sell more houses and how to invest. And
cool.
It's all over the place, Amazon, whatever.
Awesome.
Right on. Cool, Pat. Well, listen, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really, really do appreciate it. We thank you for your time. And if you guys have any questions for Pat, you can do that at biggerpockets.com/show190 on the show notes. And thanks again, and we'll look forward to keeping in touch. All right, guys, that was Pat Hyben. Big thanks to Pat for coming on the show. $1 billion in real estate transactions.
That's
wow.
That's a lot. Hey, Josh, how many horizontal income streams do you have?
That's none of your business.
I know. I don't know what I have either. I don't think I have 60.
I'm sure I have 60.
But I'm gonna sit down and count them, though, later.
Yeah. I've got a few, but I need more.
I need more. So yes. I'm going to go out and find some more.
That's my new goal. I'm going to go and get lots of new streams.
Yeah. And I just love that philosophy of, you know, like if something drastic happens to something, you know, if one of my rental properties burns down, I've got another one to cover. You know, I've got other ones that are going to make me okay. I mean, even like I've kind of said that in the past. I think you and I have talked about that.
You actually did have one of your income properties.
I did have one of them burn down.
Didn't you?
And I didn't make rent for six months. And
quite,
it's okay.
Quite the story.
Yeah, that was fun. And we're not going to relive that nightmare.
Hey, Brandon, text. your house burned down.
Yeah.
I burned your house down. I don't remember what it was. I was sitting next to you.
You need to call me. Your house is on fire. And then jerk.
Oh, you know exactly what he said, don't you?
Yeah. That's what we get when we buy low income rentals. You know, that's all right.
I'm not a fan. Pat's on it. Pat's doing it, and props to him. But like, you know, it just takes a different type of person to do it. I don't think I could buy a college rental.
Yeah.
And not stop by and see that the walls were kicked in, or that, you know, the keg has destroyed the banister, or whatever else is happening in there for years at a time. I like that.
Yeah.
That wouldn't work for me, but like it works for some people. And so like that's a great strategy for Pat. And I know lots of people who are also doing that. But, you know, so you've got to find what works for you. You know, not every story is going to inspire you to kind of do what they're doing, but you've got to take what they provide and learn from it and take a lesson away from it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
What else is happening?
My brother's getting married next week.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm going to be in a wedding. I'm going to be
a
groomsman.
You've got a brother.
Wow. I do have a brother, and he's getting married out in Boston. So.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to go visit the Boston Harbor.
Don't fatten a pack out and have it, Dad.
I'll try not to.
Boston is amazing. I'm a Mets fan, so all my fellow baseball fans will know that this is really hard for me to say, but Fenway Park is an amazing stadium.
I'll have to go look and see if
it's the oldest. Well, that or Wrigley. I forget which one's the oldest. I think Fenway is. It's one of the two oldest stadiums around, and it's just like really cool to go and catch a baseball game there. It feels nostalgic.
I'm gonna go look and see if they have one while I'm there. I'm there for like 4 days, so maybe one of the nights. Yeah, it's the same night as the wedding. Whatever. What's more important? You tell me.
Yeah, we did Boston Tea Party this summer. We did just, you know, get out there, travel the town, man. It's a cool town. Lots of fun stuff.
That I will. I'll take the baby out clubbing.
You should do it. We'll be clubbing.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's what I do. All right.
Well, good times. Guys, thank you for listening. Again, this is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 190. Make sure to check in next time on the show. And if you're not already engaged, connecting to other people on our platform, I definitely recommend you create an account today. Jump in on our forums at biggerpockets.com/forums. We've got almost 600,000 members on the Bigger Pockets site. I mean, there's no reason you should not be on there creating an account and connecting to other local real estate investors, because that's how you build your business. That's how you get deals. That's how you find opportunities. Get in there and network. Guess how much it costs you? A whopping zero. Create an account today for free at biggerpockets.com, and you can start networking today with other successful real estate investors in your area. Make it happen. With that, I'm out of here. This is Josh Dorkin signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, FOUR, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.